Global Diversification and Extinction. Chapter 8 of some textbook by some Foot Miller person, according to the label. The investigation of global diversity has flourished in paleontology during the past quarter century. In a sense, this can be viewed as the culmination of efforts spanning several centuries to catalog all the contents of the fossil record. But there is little doubt that diversity studies have also been spurred on by additional factors, including, one, the advent of computers, which permit the assembly and analysis of large databases, two, a growing interest in the history of global diversity through geologic time, which relates to environmental change coupled with evolutionary patterns and processes highlighted throughout this book, and three, present-day concerns about the ongoing crisis in diversity, or as it is commonly called, biodiversity, for which the fossil record provides a historical perspective at timescales far exceeding the human lifespan. In this chapter, we consider the major features of global diversification and extinction, including large-scale transitions in taxonomic composition over time intervals characterized by significantly elevated extinction rates, mass extinctions, regional variations in global diversity trends, and the analysis of morphological diversity as a complement to the more traditional reliance on taxonomic diversity. 8.1. The nature of biological diversity. The term diversity has taken on a variety of meanings in biological and paleontological research. For example, ecologists often characterize the diversity of a given set of taxa with metrics that account jointly for the number of unique taxa in a sample, taxonomic richness, and the abundances of each taxon. Recently, paleontologists have also formalized the concept of morphological diversity, which provides an alternative to the strict assessment of taxonomic composition as a measure of macroevolutionary trends and dynamics. With respect to global diversity, the main focus has been on the calibration and explanation of trends through time in global taxonomic richness. As we will see, these efforts for the Phanerozoic Eon, the interval of Earth history characterized by an abundant record of multicellular organisms, are complemented by consideration of diversity trends at local and regional scales and how these combine to produce the patterns that we observe at the global level. But much of the motivation for local and regional studies came from the recognition of a set of intriguing patterns first observed at the global level. Thus, the initial focus in this chapter is on the tools that permit global-scale analysis, including the development of global taxonomic databases and the use of these data to construct global diversity curves. We've already considered in Chapter 7 methods for measuring origination and extinction. These methods will also be important in our discussions in this chapter. 8.2. Global taxonomic databases. Before constructing a graph that depicts the global history of diversity through successive intervals of geologic time, fossil taxa must first be cataloged in a database that lists, for each taxon, the interval of its first and last known global appearances. Although there are various methods for actually tabulating a diversity curve, see below, the basic objective is to determine from these data the number of taxa that were extant from interval to interval. Substantial efforts, therefore, have been focused on the development of databases that accurately capture information on fossil occurrences collected worldwide. This has been aided for more than a century by the development of encyclopedic compilations of known fossil occurrences over broad regions, or in the case of publications like the Treatise on Vertebrate Paleontology, the entire world. Historically, the development of regional or global diversity curves has been followed closely on the assembly of these compilations. Among the earliest examples was John Phillips' pair of graphs, figure 8.1, produced in 1860 for fossil marine biotas of Great Britain based on John Morris's publication, A Catalogue of British Fossils, 1854. Despite the geographic limitation of the data that Phillips depicted, the clear implication was that he was capturing patterns of broader global significance, and indeed, the major features of these graphs are shared by global compilations produced more than a century later. The best-known databases used to compile Phanerozoic global marine diversity curves in recent times were developed by Jack Sepkowski at the family and genus levels. Other efforts have been equally ambitious, resulting in diversity curves that are quite similar to those derived from Sepkowski's databases. A portion of Sepkowski's genus-level compendium is shown in Figure 8.2, which illustrates two important features of the database. first, the degree of stratigraphic resolution in first and last known global appearances is highly variable. But, in general, Sepkowski sought to resolve these appearances to fine-scale subdivisions of the geologic timescale, such as sub-epochs. Secondly, while Sepkowski initiated his data compilations by extracting information from the treatise on vertebrate paleontology, his efforts moved far beyond the treatise. The collection of new data from the fossil record and the refinement of taxonomic designations is an ever-evolving process for even well-known taxa, and any single volume of the treatise inevitably becomes outdated shortly after or even during its publication. Thus, Sepkowski relied on the primary literature to continually expand and refine his compendia. This last point serves as a general reminder that in the study of fossil biodiversity, the data are never complete because new discoveries and analyses that affect the data are almost continuously forthcoming in the literature. Nevertheless, as discussed in Chapter 1, there is a substantial evidence that for broader perspectives on Phanerozoic global diversity trends, databases like Sepkowski's compendia have matured sufficiently to capture accurately the main biotic transitions preserved in the fossil record. Figure 8.1. Phillips's 1860 depiction of the history of Phanerozoic marine diversity, based on the occurrences of marine fossils in Great Britain. A. An illustration of changes through time in the number of species. B. A summary of changes through time in the relative contributions of major taxa to the overall composition of the marine biota. Although some names are outdated, the transitions that Phillips depicted closely approximate those illustrated more than a century later by other researchers. Figure 8.2. A small portion of Sepkowski's 2002 genus-level global compendium, depicting the global stratigraphic ranges of several strophonomide brachiopods that were extant during the Ordovician period, abbreviated in the compendium by the letter O. Intervals of first and last known global appearances are indicated, except when the genus is confined to a single interval, in which case only a single designation is provided, e.g., that's on the edge of the page and I can't quite see what it says. Note that the stratigraphic resolution is variable. Designations in parentheses are abbreviated names for series or stages of the geologic timescale, some of which have changed in updated versions of the timescale. In many cases, finer subdivisions of these intervals are designated as lower, -1, middle, lower, L, middle, M, and upper, U. 8.3. Construction of global diversity curves. Methods for constructing global diversity curves are conceptually straightforward, but variations have been proposed over the past several years, as described and illustrated in Box 8.1. The objective is to characterize the number of taxa extant in consecutive stratigraphic intervals, and then to depict these values on an XY plot. As explained in Box 8.1, there are many ways to count the number of taxa, all of which rest on the convention that each taxon ranges through the entire stratigraphic interval between its first and last appearances, as depicted in the database. A potential problem with the Phanerozoic scale diversity curves is the possibility that values are inflated toward the present day, a pattern termed pull of the recent. Two separate aspects of this phenomenon concern us here. The first, as discussed in Chapter 1, is the increase, particularly in the Cenozoic, in the amount of sedimentary rock, and hence the number of fossils, available for sampling. The second is the direct consequence of the range-through assumption, and the likelihood that the recent, i.e. the present day, is far better sampled than even well-preserved parts of the fossil record, Figure 8.4. As the recent is approached, it is probably not uncommon for taxa to occur in just one stratigraphic interval in the fossil record, stratigraphic singletons, or that are limited to a narrow stratigraphic window to have a recent representative. Whenever this is the case, the taxa in question are credited to the entire interval between their recent and their first, and perhaps only, appearance in the fossil record. This inflates diversity above the level that would be achieved if no data from the recent were available. This is of little or no consequence, say, for Paleozoic taxa, because they are unlikely to have recent representatives. But it may happen frequently with late Mesozoic and especially Cenozoic taxa. The actual inflation induced by the pull of the recent is difficult to quantify. One way of assessing this problem would be to develop a database that includes information not only on the global first appearance of a taxon that ranges to the recent, but also on known occurrences that fall after the first appearance. With these data, it could be determined for a given extant taxon whether there remains a significant gap between its last known fossil appearance and the recent. In a pioneering analysis of bivalve mollusks that adopted this approach, David Jablonski and colleagues, 2003, studied 958 fossil genera and subgenera that are still extant today. Of these, 906, 95%, have fossil representatives in the Pliocene and or Pleistocene strata, suggesting that, at least for this important Cenozoic group, the pull of the recent is minimal. Questions remain concerning the possibility that the Pliocene and Pleistocene records are, in themselves, so unusually outstanding that they produce a pull of the Plio-Pleistocene. This possibility has yet to be evaluated, and it also remains to be determined whether the pattern documented by Jablonski and colleagues will hold up for other taxa. Nevertheless, this analysis illustrates the promising, if time-consuming, procedure for addressing what has been a persistent question in paleontology. Pull of the recent is but one feature that might cause a global diversity trend to depart from the true biological signal. Even in intervals far removed from the recent, variations from interval to interval in the availability of fossil samples, the intensity of sampling, and the interval duration could all cause further distortion. Sepkoski reasoned that one way to help overcome these problems would be to exclude singletons from consideration. In Sepkoski's view, variations in the number of singletons from interval to interval relate directly to variations in sampling. If a particular interval has significantly more singletons than the intervals that surround it, this could be taken to indicate that the size of the sample for that interval is inflated in some way. Thus, producing his genus-level depiction of Phanerozoic diversity, figure 8.5b, Sepkoski did not include singletons. This procedure, which damples interval-to-interval variations in diversity, see box 8.1, has been adopted by several other authors, reflecting a growing consensus that this helps to mitigate variations in sampling intensity. Box 8.1, construction of diversity curves. This box illustrates the construction of global diversity curves using methods discussed in the main text. The data for these curves, presented in Table 8.1, consist of 40 hypothetical genera whose first and last appearances fall within epochs of the Cenozoic. 21 of the taxa are extant, i.e. their last appearance is the recent. These data are used to construct a set of values, presented in Table 8.2, that provide the basis for the curves depicted in 8.3. An important assumption in the construction of all diversity curves, known aptly as the range-through assumption, is that taxon remains extant for the entire interval between its first and last known occurrences in the fossil record. Importantly, if a taxon that is represented in the fossil record is also extant today, it is therefore assumed that the taxon ranged through the entire interval from its first appearance in the fossil record to the present day, even if its first appearance is its only known fossil occurrence, i.e., it is a fossil singleton. To calculate diversity by the methods illustrated here, we must first determine the number of origins, n orig, and the number of extinctions, n ext, in each interval. For example, in perusing table 8.1, we can see that there were 9 first appearances and 1 last appearance in the Paleocene. Therefore, in table 8.2, n orig for the Paleocene is 9 and n ext is 1. Once these values have been determined for all intervals, diversity can be calculated for the standard and boundary crosser methods, figures 8.3a and 8.3b. Wow, lots of figures and stuff, using equations presented in the table. In addition, the table presents values based on the variations of the standard method that exclude singletons, figure 8.3c, and recent occurrences, figure 8.3d. The elimination of recent occurrences, advocated by some researchers, automatically relegates to singleton status all genera that range to the recent. In practice, a decision to ignore these occurrences should be coupled with an attempt to discover the last known fossil occurrences of these taxa to avoid artificial inflation of the number of singletons. See text for further discussion. It should also be noted that many of the values described here and depicted in Table 8.2 are also relevant to our discussion of evolutionary rates in Chapter 7, albeit with a slightly different terminology. See Box 7.2 for a comparison of these terms. A diversity curve can be built at any taxonomic level. family, and genus-level depictions of Phanerozoic diversity are illustrated in Figure 8.5 and are broadly similar to one another, but they differ in two respects that relate to the hierarchical nature of taxonomic classification. First, and not surprisingly, there were substantially more genera than families during most Phanerozoic intervals. Second, the genus-level curve is more volatile than the family-level depiction, punctuated by increases and decreases that are more exaggerated. This is because a net change in family diversity during a given time will necessarily be accompanied by a change in genus-level diversity that is at least as large. Every family contains at least one genus, and given that many families contain more than one genus, sometimes many more, the accompanying change at the genus level will likely be more pronounced. In contrast, a net change in genus diversity need not be accompanied by a change at the family level. In the most extreme cases, an increase in genus diversity could take place entirely within families that are already extant, and a decrease in genus diversity could take place without the extinction of any families to which the genera belong. Major intervals of extinction are marked by significant declines at both the genus and family levels, but the declines are inevitably more pronounced, on a percentage basis, at the genus level. To further dampen the effects of variations in sampling and interval length, see Box 7.3, Richard Bambach, I've seen that name before, but I don't know how to pronounce it, Bambach and other researchers have advocated the use of only boundary-crossing taxa in Phanerozoic diversity compilations, figure 8.6, in contrast to the, quote, standard method, unquote, Box 8.1, used by Sepkoski and many other workers. Bambach tabulated standing diversity at boundaries between intervals by determining the total number of genera extant in the older interval and then subtracting from that value the number of genera whose ranges ended in the older bin. If done sequentially for a set of boundaries, this conveys for each interval the change in the number of genera entering it and leaving it. See section 7.2 in box 8.1 for an illustration of this method in comparison to others. Undoubtedly, the methods used to reconstruct the history of the Phanerozoic global diversity will continue to evolve as researchers seek to extract meaningful biological signals from the raw material of the fossil record. The main focus in this chapter thus far has been on the development of graphs depicting Phanerozoic diversity for marine mammals and protists. Corresponding compilations and graphs have also been developed for terrestrial animals and for plants. Examples that illustrate Phanerozoic patterns among marine and terrestrial vertebrates and among terrestrial plants illustrated in figure 8.7. In these depictions, and in those of marine diversity that we looked at earlier, there are major transitions in taxonomic composition throughout the Phanerozoic, as well as significant increases in total diversity in the approach to the recent. While the pull of the recent and other sampling issues might inflate the appearance of the Mesozoic-Cenozoic increase, there is little doubt that the underlying taxonomic transitions took place at the approximate times indicated by these graphs. A major challenge confronting paleontologists has been to explain these transitions and to determine whether macroevolutionary themes common to all realms and taxa are responsible for them. We turn to these issues in the next section. 8.4. Phanerozoic transitions in taxonomic composition. The marine realm. Building on the pioneering efforts of Carl Flesse and John Imbrie, 1973, and Jack Sepkoski, 1981, presented a quantitative description of transitions among marine taxa through the Phanerozoic. Sepkoski coined the term evolutionary fauna to describe broad sets of taxa that were globally dominant through extended geologic intervals. He recognized three Phanerozoic evolutionary faunas, figures 8.5 and 8.8. The Cambrian fauna dominated marine settings through the Cambrian following the initial burst of diversification at the start of the Phanerozoic, known as the Cambrian explosion. The Paleozoic fauna diversified significantly during the Ordovician radiation, when global diversity attained unprecedented levels that were maintained through much of the remaining Paleozoic. The modern fauna exhibited limited diversity throughout the Paleozoic era, but diversified appreciably in the post-Paleozoic to become the dominant biota of the Mesozoic and Cenozoic eras. Sepkoski argued that the three evolutionary faunas were more than just coincidental collections of taxa. He viewed them as functional units that interacted with one another, causing the major global biotic transitions observed through the Phanerozoic. This perspective has been challenged by many paleontologists, in part because it is now understood that evolutionary faunas were neither as internally cohesive nor as distinct from one another in time and space as Sepkoski once envisioned. Nevertheless, it is important to consider Sapkowski's quantitative perspective of transitions among evolutionary faunas because of its central role in developing a large-scale synthetic outlook in the integration of biodiversity. Sapkowski's goal was to develop a mathematical description of the major features of the Phanerozoic marine diversification at the family level. At the heart of the model that he developed for this purpose is the logistic equation, which produces a sigmoidal, i.e. S-shaped, curve, describing an initial, nearly exponential growth in species richness, followed by a continuous decline in the rate of growth until an equilibrium level is approached. See box 8.2 for a detailed explanation of the logistic model. Building on earlier research by R.H. MacArthur and E.O. Wilson, 1967, on the colonization of newly emergent islands, Sapkowski extended the concept of equilibrium to global marine diversity by reasoning that the Earth's oceans collectively constitute a finite space with limited resources in which marine diversity cannot continue to increase indefinitely. Sapkowski first suggested that a simple logistic equation, see box 8.2, adequately describes the Phanerozoic history of marine diversity at the taxonomic level of orders, figure 8.11. The diversity of orders increased dramatically through the Cambro-Ordovician, but then leveled off and maintained a fairly steady rate thereafter. However, as we've already seen, figure 8.5, this is a clear departure from the pattern of Phanerozoic diversification observed at the family and genus levels, both of which exhibit significant increases through the post-Paleozoic. This difference reflects the observation that the plurality of taxa at the order level and the higher originated during the late Precambrian through Paleozoic, whereas an increasing number of families, genera, and species continued to originate through the whole of the Phanerozoic. To accommodate the post-Paleozoic family level increase, Sapkowski developed a series of three coupled logistic equations, see box 8.2, which corresponded to the three Phanerozoic evolutionary faunas. The central premise of coupling is that the level of diversity achieved at any one point in time by any one of the components depends not only on its standing diversity, but also on the summed diversity of all three components. Using the comparison, using the coupled approach, Sapkowski produced a simulated family-level trajectory, figure 8.12, that closely approximated the actual pattern, particularly when major extinction events, see section 8.6, were imposed in a simulation. Compare figure 8.12b with figure 8.5a. The details of the simulated diversity trajectories in figure 8.12 depend on whether mass extinctions are imposed, but note that the ultimate fates of the three phases are the same whether or not there are mass extinctions. The ability of the model to depict diversity trajectories for the three faunas rests on the assumption that the Paleozoic fauna could obtain a higher level of equilibrium diversity than the Cambrian fauna, and that the modern fauna could achieve a higher level than the Paleozoic fauna. This was accomplished by selecting model parameters for each of the three curves that corresponded to observed relative characteristics of the Cambrian, Paleozoic, and modern faunas, an average decline from one fauna to the next in initial diversification rates, a similar decline in average origination and extinction rates, and an increase in equilibrium diversity, see box 8.2. Although the volume of the Earth's oceans has varied through the Phanerozoic, there is little reason to think that there has been a significant net increase in their total volume, or that the area of the seafloor available for colonization. Thus, the increase in equilibrium diversity for successive faunas, if real, could not have resulted from a simple increase in the amount of space available for colonization. Instead, an increase in ecological space, or the variety of ways that organisms could make a living, may have been responsible for the differences among evolutionary faunas. We will return to this topic in Chapter 9. While the success of this model in describing the observed pattern of marine biotic transitions opens up the possibility that biological interactions among members of the three evolutionary faunas caused the transitions, e.g. through competition for resources and for space, then the close match certainly does not demonstrate that this was the case. To strengthen the argument of a key role for interactions as agents of long-term change, it is important to document both the precise nature of the interactions and the likelihood that these interactions persisted for extended intervals of geological time. It is virtually impossible to do this at the broad level of evolutionary faunas, but we might do better if we restrict our analyses to small sets of taxa for which the nature of interactions can be understood. With this in mind, Sepkoski and colleagues developed a coupled logistic model that described the global transition from cyclostome to chelostome bryozoans through the Cretaceous period and the Cenozoic era. Figures 8.13a and 8.13b. In this case, not only did the model successfully describe the global diversity trajectories of the two groups, but there is also evidence from the fossil record that chelostomes overgrew cyclostomes in a significant majority of observed cases. Figure 8.13c, opening up the possibility that over the long term, chelostomes might have outcompeted cyclostomes. As we suggested earlier, the coupled logistic model has not been accepted universally by paleontologists, and several alternative scenarios have been proposed in recent years. These range from the suggestion that the entire Phanerozoic trajectory of marine diversity is best described as an exponential diversification, Box 8.2, Benton, 1995, punctuated and sometimes impeded by major extinction events, to the hypothesis that it is best represented as a sequence of simple logistic diversification intervals demarcated and reset by major extinctions. In addition, it has been demonstrated that the turnover rates of the taxa in the modern fauna increased significantly in the Mesozoic and Cenozoic, which is not accounted for in Sepkoski's setup of the coupled logistical model. However, even though in the end it may be demonstrated that Sepkoski's coupled model is not appropriate as an explanation of Phanerozoic marine diversification, the model endures as the intellectual starting point for virtually all alternative views. It also continues to provide students of paleontology with a unique opportunity to understand how biodiversity trends can be assessed numerically. Box 8.2, Development of the Coupled Logistical Model. The use of the coupled logistic model by Sepkoski and others to simulate Phanerozoic diversity patterns can be explained in three steps. We begin by first considering the simple case of a diversity trajectory inhibited during an exponential diversification. To simulate an exponential diversification, we can use the following equation. D equals D t minus 1 plus RD t minus 1. Where D1, or DT, I think, represents the diversity. I can't actually see what symbol that is. Represents the diversity, the number of taxa, in interval T. DT minus 1 represents the diversity in interval T minus 1, it is a T. And R denotes a constant rate of increase, sometimes referred to as the intrinsic rate of increase. In simulations of Phanerozoic diversification, Sepkoski set the value of a simulated time unit at 1 million years. An example of the application of this equation is presented here in Figure 8.9. Here, the starting diversity at time interval 0 is set to unity, and the intrinsic rate of increase, R, is set to 2. For example, we can calculate the diversity at time 1. D1 equals D0 plus RD0. And then D1 equals 1 plus the product of 2 times 1. And D1 equals 3. In Figure 8.9, the results of the simulation are plotted for time units through 1 through 7, both linearly and semi-logarithmically. The semi-log plot illustrates an important attribute of exponential diversification, indicated here by a straight line, a constant per taxon rate of diversification. By this we mean that the rate of diversification exhibited by a single taxon remains unchanged throughout the simulation. In this way, diversity always triples from one time unit to the next. For example, as we move from time unit 6 to time unit 7, each of the 729 taxa extant in time, unit 6, triples on average in number, thereby resulting in 2,187 taxa in time unit 7. Next, we consider the simple logistic diversification. The equation for a simple logistic diversification can be developed by first altering slightly the structure of our equation for exponential diversification. DT equals DT minus 1 plus we have parentheses with K, is that a 5? And then K minus E, KS minus KE maybe? End parentheses DT minus 1. where KS represents the rate of taxonomic origination and KE the rate of taxonomic extinction. This is in recognition of the fact that diversification, characterized earlier as the constant R, is the product of a balance between the origination and extinction of taxa. R equals KS minus KE. So if KS minus KE is greater than zero, then diversity will increase. If KS minus KE is less than zero, diversity will decrease. The premise of the simple logistic equation is that rates of origination and extinction are both affected by the number of taxa already present, because there is only a finite amount of space available for the consistence of taxa. Thus, the rate of origination is thought to decrease, and the rate of extinction is thought to increase as diversity increases. In their simplest forms, the relationships between evolutionary rates and the diversity can be modeled as linear functions. KS equals KS naught minus AD, and KE equals KE naught plus BD, where KS naught and KE naught are the initial rates of origination and extinction at the start of the simulation, and A and B are constants that describe the slope rate of the decrease in the origination rate and the increase of the extinction rate as functions of increasing diversity. The right-hand sides of these equations can be substituted for KS and KE in our earlier equation. DT equals DT minus 1 plus beginning parentheses KS naught minus ADT minus 1 end parentheses minus parentheses KE naught plus BDT minus 1 end parentheses end brackets TT minus 1. This equation describes simple logistic diversification. While it may appear a bit intimidating, it's actually pretty straightforward. The primary difference from the equation for exponential diversification is that instead of remaining fixed for the entire simulation, the rates of origination and extinction converge as diversity increases. Because of this convergence, the rate of diversification, which is nearly exponential at the start of the simulation, will begin to decrease until we reach equilibrium diversity. That is, the point at which the rate of origination is equal to the rate of extinction. From then on, diversity will remain unchanged. An example of a curve generated with the simple logistic equation is produced in Figure 8.10a. This solution was produced using the parameters provided in the figure and by setting diversity at time 0, d0, to 4. Note that the curve is sigmoidal, reflecting the decrease in the total rate of diversification associated with the approach to equilibrium diversity. All simple logistic curves are sigmoidal in shape. However, several aspects of this curve vary from solution to solution, including the rate at which diversity increases initially, the rate at which diversification begins to decline as equilibrium is approached, and the rate of actual value of the equilibrium. These attributes of the curve are contingent on the parameter values, like those used to generate Figure 8.10a. In general, a greater initial rate of diversification will be associated with a greater difference in the initial rates of origination, KS naught, and extinction, KE naught. The rate at which diversification decays as equilibrium is approached will be greater in cases where slopes are greater in the decay of the origination rate A and in the increase of the extinction rate B. Finally, we consider coupled logistic diversification, which entails the simultaneous diversification of two or more groups. The premise of the model is that the rates of origination and extinction for a given group are affected not only by the number of constituent taxa already present for the group, but also by the number of constituent taxa belonging to other groups diversifying at the same time. Thus, this model is viewed as interactive, or quote, coupled, because the diversification of one group affects that of others. In a coupled logistic model, each model group is referred to as a phase. The diversification of a phase is governed by the parameters defined in the coupled logistic equation. dxt equals dxt minus 1 plus start bracket ks naught minus adtot t minus 1 end parentheses minus parentheses ke naught plus bdtot t minus 1 end parentheses end brackets dxt minus 1, where dxt represents the diversity of phase x in interval t. dx t minus 1 represents the diversity of phase x in interval t minus 1, and dtot t minus 1 is the total diversity of all phases in interval t minus 1. All other parameters are identical to those of the simple logistic equation, but the actual values for the four constants, Ks0, Ke0, A, and B, usually vary among the phases. Comparison with equation for simple logistic growth indicates only two differences between the simple and coupled equations. One, the inclusion in the coupled version of dt, ot, t minus 1 in place of dt minus 1 in the terms describing the decline in the rate of origination and the increase in the rate of extinction, and two, the possibility that the rate of extinction can exceed the rate of origination as the simulation proceeds. This causes the diversification of a phase to be impeded by that of other phases in accord with the premise of the coupled model. Just as importantly, as illustrated by the following example, it opens up the possibility that a phase will experience a decline in total diversity in the event that the extinction rate does indeed exceed the origination rate. Examples of two simultaneously diversifying curves generated with coupled logistic equations are presented in Figure 8.10b. The parameters for phase 1 are identical to those used in the example of simple logistic diversification. Note, however, that the trajectory of phase 1 is rather different from that in the simple logistic model. The diversification of phase 1 is impeded early in the simulation, and its subsequent growth is much slower than in the simple case. This is a consequence of its numerical interaction with phase 2, which initially diversifies much more rapidly than phase 1, and thus adds significantly to the DTOT term, diversity total term, I think. The added diversity included in the diversity total term accelerates the rate of decline in phase 1's origination rate and the rate of increase in its extinction rate relative to the simple model. Despite the initial lag in phase 1, its diversification slowly accelerates, quite literally at the expense of phase 2. Ultimately, it would have overtaken phase 2 had the simulation been continued beyond 500 time units. Why? It is a direct consequence of the relative values of the parameters for the two phases. Comparison of the initial origination and extinction rates for the two phases shows that the initial rate of diversification, Ks minus Ke, is greater for phase 2 than for phase 1, 0.11 versus 0.08. Thus, early in the simulation, phase 2 diversifies at a rate that far exceeds that of phase 1. However, the rate of decay in origination and growth in extinction, A and B, for phase 1 is also less than that for phase 2, 0.000035 versus 0.0000515. Thus, as the summed diversity, DTOT, of both phases increases, the cost to phase 2 is greater than to phase 1. It experiences a more rapid decline in origination and a more rapid growth in extinction, moving beyond the point where extinction exceeds origination and causing a steady decline in the diversity of phase 2. In folktale parlance, phase 1 is the tortoise and phase 2 the hare. Much the same relationship exists among the three phases of Sepkoski's 1984 coupled logistic model that describes the Phanerozoic diversity trajectories of his three evolutionary faunas. The modeled Cambrian fauna has a greater initial rate of diversification, but a greater rate of decay and diversification than the modeled Paleozoic fauna. The modeled modern fauna, in turn, initially diversifies at an even slower rate than the modeled Paleozoic fauna, but the rate of decay in its diversification rate is less than that of the modeled Paleozoic fauna. End box. The terrestrial realm. Figure 8.7 exhibits a series of transitions among vertebrates and plants that can be likened to the transitions among Sepkoski's evolutionary faunas. However, the sequential pattern of decreasing turnover rates from one fauna to the next that characterizes the marine realm in which underlies Sepkoski's coupled logistic model for marine biotas is not clearly exhibited by the major biotas of the terrestrial realm. For example, whereas all major plant groups may have experienced an initial burst of speciation followed by a rapid decline in speciation rates, there is no evidence that the, quote, evolutionary floras, unquote, illustrated in Figure 8.7b, exhibited successively lower turnover rates. In fact, there are indications that, if anything, the opposite was the case, as demonstrated by James Valentine and colleagues, 1991. While not ruling out the possibility that a coupled logistic or some alternative model could be developed to describe transitions among terrestrial plants, its numerical dynamics would obviously be different from those for marine animals. Whether these differences could reflect anything meaningful about differences in the evolutionary dynamics of marine and terrestrial systems remains to be seen, as paleontologists have only recently begun to attempt these kinds of comparisons. 8.5. Phanerozoic decline in origination and extinction rates. Given the observation that marine diversity increased during the Phanerozoic, it follows that overall, the number of originations must have exceeded the number of extinctions, particularly during intervals marked by major increases in diversity, see Box 8.2. Likewise, during intervals of declining diversity, the number of extinctions exceeded the number of originations. But what of longer-term patterns of origination and extinction? Even if there was a long-term increase in diversity, this does not necessarily mean that origination rates must have increased in parallel with diversity. An increase in diversity could have also been caused by a long-term decline in extinction rates. In fact, origination rates might have declined through the Phanerozoic, so long as the extinction rates declined at a greater rate. An initial representation of average extinction rates for marine families was presented by David Raup and Jack Sepkoski in 1982, figure 8.14. Although the main intent of the analysis was to provide a statistical basis for delineating mass extinctions, see the next section, another important aspect of the extinction was also documented: a significant long-term decline in extinction rates through the Phanerozoic. This decline has This decline has also been documented at the genus level, and a similar Phanerozoic long-term decline has been shown for origination rates, figure 8.15, as well. There was a temporary rebound in origination rates at the beginning of the Mesozoic era, in the aftermath of the most extensive extinction event in the history of life. But origination rates then began to decline anew. A long-term decline in origination rates can also be recognized in several groups of animals and plants in terrestrial settings. Therefore, any explanation for a decline in origination or extinction rates should transcend the fundamental biological differences among individual higher taxa, or the places where they live. Some researchers have proposed that the rate of decline indicates a general change through time in the nature of interactions among taxa. For example, as we will see in Chapter 9, the history of life may have been marked by a profound arms race in marine and terrestrial settings between predator and prey lineages. One potential outcome of these arms races over the long term could have been an increased resistance to extinction, but this does not explain why origination rates also declined. In marine settings, the decline in origination and extinction rates appears to reflect the overall biotic transition discussed earlier from taxa exhibiting high turnover rates, members of the Cambrian and Paleozoic faunas, to others exhibiting lower turnover rates, members of the modern fauna. This, of course, raises the question, why is it that different higher taxa exhibit turnover rates that can be so strikingly different from one another, but that can nevertheless be maintained fairly consistently among their constituent families, genera, and lineages? See Chapter 7 for additional discussion. This remains one of the unsolved mysteries of evolution, and it is certainly worthy of intensive paleontological research in the future. 8.6. Mass extinctions. The diagnosis of mass extinctions. In the past quarter century, perhaps no subject has received more attention from paleontologists than mass extinctions. This interest and excitement was spurred on by a finding reported by Nobel Prize-winning physicist Luis Alvarez and his son Walter, a geochemist. The upshot of the discovery, which we will discuss later, was that a major global extinction event at the end of the Cretaceous period may have been caused by the impact of a large asteroid or comet. The scientific debate that was triggered by the Alvarez investigation helped paleontologists recognize that catastrophic events, whatever their causes, have probably affected life profoundly. More broadly, it has motivated paleontologists and other geologists to investigate the complex relationships between physical and biological processes on Earth throughout the history of life. A mass extinction can be defined as an unusually large extinction of the Earth's biota that takes place in a relatively short interval of geologic time. While this definition is easy to understand, it inevitably motivates one to ask how large an extinction and how short a time interval. Indeed, a considerable effort has been aimed at providing an unambiguous definition of a mass extinction that would enable someone to label an interval of apparently elevated extinction definitively as a mass extinction. Perhaps the most straightforward means of diagnosing a mass extinction is to assess the percentage of taxa that became extinct, or more precisely, exhibited their last global appearances, interval by interval, throughout the Phanerozoic, and then determine whether there were intervals during which these percentages were elevated substantially. Although this might not seem like a very precise method, paleontologists have nevertheless been able to designate 5 intervals in which percentages stood well above the levels exhibited at most other times. These constitute the, quote, Big 5, unquote, mass extinctions of the Phanerozoic. By far, the largest of these occurred during the late Permian, when upwards of 40% of families and 60% of genera became extinct. Other major extinctions, with extinction percentages in the order of 20% of families and 30% of 50, I don't know, that's off the page, percent of genera, took place at or near the ends of the Ordovician, Devonian, Triassic, and Cretaceous periods. In an analysis discussed in section 8.5 in relation to the long-term decline in origination and extinction rates, Raup and Sepkoski also suggested a statistical definition for a mass extinction based on the assessment of the number of extinctions per million years for the Phanerozoic stages included in their analysis. A mass extinction was defined as any interval during which the extinction rate exceeded the statistical confidence interval for a regression line that was fitted to the data, figure 8.14. By this standard, of the Big Five, only the late Devonian extinction did not stand significantly above background levels. However, as Raup and Sepkoski pointed out, the late Devonian appears to be unique relative to the other extinctions in that extinction rates were elevated for 3 successive stages. This was not the only statistical definition of a mass extinction that Raup and Sepkoski offered. In a series of subsequent analyses on the extinction records from the late Permian to recent, they defined a mass extinction as any interval during which the percentage of families or genera becoming extinct stood significantly above the percentages for intervals that immediately surrounded it, figure 8.17. On this basis, several additional mass extinctions were delineated, particularly at the genus level, beyond the 2 post-Paleozoic members of the Big Five. Interestingly, nearly all of these were episodes that paleontologists had recognized previously as significant extinctions based on their experiences with regional patterns of faunal change.